The Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit is now in session. All persons having any business before this Honorable Court may give their attendance and they shall be heard. God save the United States of America and this Honorable Court. Court is in session. Today's case will be called as previously announced and times will be as allotted to counsel. The case today is United States versus Felix A. Serrano Barrios, appeal number 21-1457. Attorney Suero, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your argument.
Good afternoon. My name is Hector Suero Alvarez on behalf of appellant Felix Serrano Barrios. May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
Thank you. This was Mr. Serrano's first revocation and the first time he appeared before this district judge. Nonetheless, the court sentenced him to the statutory maximum, that's 24 months in prison, and twice the government's recommended sentence of 12 months. And the court based this sentence on findings that derived from allegations that were contested and information that was not part of the record. The first of those findings was that there were no treatment options left for Mr. Serrano's lifelong struggle with cocaine, crack cocaine addiction. The court based those findings on probation's motions and the government's allegations at the final revocation hearing. But there simply is there's no evidence on the record to support that finding, and there were treatment options left. Mr. Serrano was attending treatment, he was participating, he has a considerable substance abuse history, and he was trying. Now, the second of those findings was
that... He had tested positive for drugs on several occasions, isn't that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. He had tested positive twice and then admitted on four additional occasions. He admitted all those positives, and some of the admissions were admissions where he actually picked up the phone, called probation, and asked for help.
So I appreciate the fact that the nature of addiction means struggle, but wasn't it reasonable for the district court to conclude that, at least to date, your client had failed in his treatment program?
Your Honor, I think the court's conclusion at the final revocation hearing wasn't that it had failed the treatment, it was that there were no treatment options left. And I think that's a step too far. It's one thing to have some setbacks, to have some relapses, to test positive, but what the court actually found was that there were no treatment options left for Mr. Serrano. And I think it's shown in the record on several places, but the most important was when the court sentenced him, it explicitly said that they had extinguished all release options, that there were no treatment options left. Furthermore, the government requested, even though it acknowledged that Mr. Serrano's treatment history was not before the final revocation hearing, it requested that the court sentenced him based on the failures.
Can I ask you whether, I mean, I don't know how you think we're supposed to read the words that the district court used. And I guess as a preliminary question, are we on de novo review from your perspective or plain error review?
Well, for the factual finding, we're on clear error review, on abuse of discretion, I think. We're not on plain error like the government argued regarding the procedural.
Because I guess here's my question. I had a little trouble figuring out whether the district court is trying to make a statement about whether there are treatment options in the sense of, can this person be treated, versus whether there are treatment options of a kind that would justify release. And it seems to me those are not the same thing. In other words, even if there might be theoretically a treatment option still available, he hasn't had expert testimony about what all the treatment possibilities are in the world, but it does seem to me more reasonable to conclude on this record that the basis for concluding that there are options for treatment that would justify release are exhausted enough that I'm not going to have the person back out there on the understanding that he'll be treated. And I guess I just don't see what in the record makes that unreasonable. It's not as if the defendant had put forward evidence of a treatment option that would clearly work and that would give confidence greater than we otherwise would have given his record on the treatment he was getting.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Serrano simply didn't admit anything regarding his treatment history, so there was no testimony or evidence regarding his treatment history at the final revocation hearing.
Yeah, but I think just to Judge Thompson's point, what there is evidence of is that he's being treated for an addiction, and he's plainly still using. So if the point of the release with treatment is that I'm not concerned about him being out because he's not going to revert to using the substances that were involved in the carjacking, what would be the reason to have confidence that's still true if, while on the treatment program, he continues to use?
I think for the court to reach that conclusion, it should
about
have heard
4 minutes left. 4 minutes.
It should have heard testimony on the treatment options that Mr. Serrano did receive and what were available and what were the results. Because
Did your client put forward in a proffer about what the treatment options that were available that would work differently than what had been given?
We did not, but there are two points there. First, I think the last treatment option worked, and that's taking probation's motion at face value. But I think the burden of proof is on the government there. Once we challenge that finding and we objected to that, that finding becomes an issue of fact that the government then has the burden of proof, and
I guess what I'm saying, that might be true if your client wasn't in a situation he had already shown through conduct that the treatment he was being given wasn't working. That seems like that's reasonable to conclude, isn't it?
I don't think it's reasonable based on the record before the court, because Mr. Serrano...
But wasn't the record before the court that he had had inpatient treatment as well as outpatient treatment, and that he offended again after both of those different types of treatment?
There was evidence about the relapses and testing positive, but there was no evidence about the nature of treatment, how Mr. Serrano did on those treatments, and what were the treatment options left. I think taking the positives as evidence or supporting a conclusion that the treatment had failed, it fails to take into account the very specific facts of this case, where if we had heard evidence about the treatment, then the court would have been in a better position to determine that, in fact, the treatment had failed, and the actual finding that it made, treatment.
Is this a point about the length of the revocation sentence, or a point about revocation altogether?
No, we're not contesting revocation.
Right, the point about the length of the revocation sentence.
Yes.
I guess what I'm having trouble is we give a lot of discretion to the district court in setting it, and if his determination is that I've lost confidence that there's a treatment option available on this record for having him be released again relatively soon, I guess I'm still not hearing what in the record shows that to be an unreasonable conclusion.
There is no evidence on the record about how the treatment went except for the positives. And I think from a positive...
Well, we know he relapsed, though. So we know that the treatment wasn't successful.
I think that's one step further. There's a difference between a relapse and that the treatment had failed.
From the perspective of the district court trying to figure out his confidence level in allowing this person to be out on the streets, I think he might be less interested in the question of, you know, relative degrees of treatment compared to where he had been before. Maybe it was improving things. But if the concern is it's not stopping him from using, that would be the relevant consideration for the district court, wouldn't it be?
It would be, but I think the court still needs to consider the larger context.
Okay.
Why was he relapsing, and in what context was he relapsing? What were the options available?
Because that's time.
Thank you.
I actually had a question. Isn't every case in which there's a revocation proceeding regarding condition number 3 of the standard conditions, not to use controlled substances, couldn't we say in every single one of those cases the person has relapsed and failed their treatment? That's why we're having a revocation proceeding?
I think it's fair to say that the person relapsed, but that the treatment had failed. A positive drug result after is not the same as saying the treatment failed. You need a little bit more context about the treatment history in order to get to that conclusion.
Right.
That was simply not before.
Is there any evidence that 5 failures or so over the course of a year is at all not the mine run case for a revocation proceeding for a violation of Condition 3?
That would be taking the positives outside of the context of the specific defendant. Mr. Serrano had been addicted to crack, is addicted to crack for more than 25 years. The taking probation's motions at face value, some of the treatments were successful and he completed. He was asking for help. He was working the entire time. So to find that just positives were sufficient to conclude that the treatment had failed, there's a difference between a relapse and that the treatment had failed. And
sure. Does the GSR calculation take into account how many violations of the condition there have been?
It does not take into account the number of violations. The guidelines do give discretion to the sentencing judge in terms of specifically the drug positives and how to treat them. For example, revocation isn't mandatory until the defendant has four positive drug tests.
Thank you.
Well, just one thing I want to make sure. The length of the sentence that's being challenged, am I right? Do you share the understanding that the district court, in justifying the imposition of that sentence, relied on the fact that there was a violation of this condition plus the condition of not having contact with law enforcement?
The court made two findings about the two conditions were violated, the positives and contact with law enforcement. But our argument is that the court went beyond and relied on Mr. Serrano's treatment history and concluded that there were no treatment options left. And that was the reason.
But I'm saying, for purposes of, it's really just related to Judge Scadda's question and trying to figure out whether it's a mine run case. Even if multiple relapses might be a mine run case in a revocation based on violating the condition about not using. Here, I thought the district court was predicating the sentence as being higher than the mine run case because, in addition to that, there was also the violation of the no law enforcement contact condition.
That was the second violation, correct. But what we believe
is it one sentence for both violations, or were there two separately identified sentences for each violation?
No, there was one single sentence of 24 months for both violations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And what I thought you were making something of the fact that the judge's judgment says that the nature of the violation was violations of Puerto Rico Penal Code based on some arrest references.
Correct, Your Honor. We believe the court had made two findings that justified the variance, not simply the revocation, which we conceded to. And one of those findings was that Mr. Serrano had avoided consequences on a technicality for a dismissed state court complaint.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But that wasn't in the court's oral statement. That wasn't in the court's oral sentencing.
It wasn't in the specific court sentencing, and I think we admit as much that there was no express finding. But if you look at the entire record and in context, I think it's very evident that the court was very concerned about the dismissed state court complaint. And the best evidence for that is that it immediately asked about the arrest and immediately said that it was dismissed based on Rule 64, when there's no mention in the record of Rule 64 of Puerto Rico Speedy Trial Act.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Suero. If at this time, if you could mute your camera and your audio, and Mr. Barber, if you could unmute your audio and your video and introduce yourself on the record to begin.
May it please the court, Kevin Barber for the United States. I'd like to pick up on a thread, if I could, that the court was just discussing with my friend on the other side, and that is about whether this is a mine run case such that imposing an upward variance was inappropriate. The reason why it was a mine run case is, first, as the court was touching on, there was not just one violation of Mr. Serrano's conditions of supervised release, which, if there had just been one, that would have generated the exact same sentencing range that Mr. Serrano was subject to. Here he violated two conditions, the 72-hour reporting condition and the controlled substance condition, and he violated the latter condition numerous times.
When you say sentencing range, do you mean statutory range or GSR? I mean
the GSR range, Your Honor.
So one violation of the drug condition yields a sentence of 24 months?
No, I meant the sentencing guidelines range. So the sentencing guidelines range was 8 to 14 months. And that was generated by the fact that Mr. Serrano's criminal history was level 6, category 6, and that he committed a grade C violation. And the grade C violation, the number of violations, didn't factor in at all into the sentencing range. So the sentencing range of 8 to 14 months didn't account for the numerosity of the violations here. So that's why this was not a mine run case and why it was
appropriate. I'm just getting confused. The numerosity of what violations? Violations of the one condition or the fact that there was a violation of two conditions?
Both, Your Honor. A single violation of a single condition would have generated the same sentencing range under the guidelines.
Just going back to Judge Kayada's question, with respect to the drug provision, suppose I have four positives. What's the range?
The range here would have been exactly the same. It would have been 8 to 14 months.
And what if I have five positives? Same.
What about one?
Same exact range, because that would just be a grade C violation. The sentencing guidelines don't account for the number of violations in this respect.
And is that because they don't care about the number or because they're imagining there's only one? In other words, would the fact that there's multiple violations itself provide a basis for a variance in the government's view?
And I think so.
Provide a basis for a variance of this size? So it's not a mine run case. Instead of having one positive, you have two positives.
I'm speculating, Chief Judge Barron, about what the Sentencing Commission had in mind here. Maybe they thought that there would only be one violation and that supervisory release would be revoked immediately. Or maybe they didn't take this into account in generating the sentencing ranges because they understood that a district judge had the discretion to impose an upward variance, as the district court did here, to account for situations where a defender has committed numerous violations of the conditions.
Well, probation, as a practical matter, not going to bring someone in on one violation of a controlled substance, are they? I mean, otherwise, you'd have a heck of a lot of revocations going on.
You may be right about that, Judge Kayada, but probation certainly has the right to bring someone in after one violation. And if it's a very serious violation, for example, they're likely to do so. The point is that the sentencing range here would have been exactly the same, even if Mr. Serrano, say, had violated only that 72-hour reporting condition that our briefs discuss. Here, he violated.
Figure out whether you think that fact helps you or hurts you.
I think it helps us, Your Honor, because
it only helps you if it's the case that the Sentencing Commission was imagining one violation justifies that range, and was thinking in their mind when they set that range that these will all be one violation people. Doesn't really help you if it's more sensible to think that the Sentencing Commission was setting a range with some understanding that there might be more than one violation. And I guess you're saying we don't really know, other than through speculating, which of the two the Sentencing Commission had in mind.
Right. I do think, Your Honor, we are speculating a little bit about what they had in mind. I don't think that it's a problem for us, even if the Sentencing Commission did contemplate that you would normally have, say, multiple positive drug tests or multiple violations in play, just because in this case, especially given Mr. Serrano's history and the circumstances of his underlying offense, his numerous episodes using controlled substances and the 72-hour reporting violation are quite serious violations. And the district court was well within its discretion here in going above the sentencing guidelines range. The other thing I wanted to discuss, if I could, is the court's discussion earlier about the court's finding that Mr. Serrano...
Before you get to that second point, I just want to...
Of course.
Is it clear that the district court was predicating the variance on the understanding that the multiple positives alone wouldn't justify this variance? That the reason the variance of this magnitude was justified was because there was also a no contact violation?
The district court didn't have any occasion to sort of segregate the violations in that way to analyze whether one or the other would have justified the sentence alone. And I don't think there's any reason to expect the court to have done that. The court simply said, I'm revoking supervised release based on these violations of the reporting condition and the drug condition. And in light of the seriousness of those violations, the number of violations, and the fact that Mr. Serrano was benefiting from programming, like the treatment.
The problem is that the guidelines themselves take into account everything you're saying. The question is, what justifies the significant upward variance?
I think, Judge Thompson, again, I respectfully disagree that the guidelines encompass or take into account everything I just said.
But why?
Because in this case, if Mr. Serrano, again, had only violated the 72-hour reporting condition, or if he had only violated the drug condition one time, the probation department would have been well within its rights to bring him in and to report those violations for revocation purposes, and the sentencing guidelines range would have been precisely the same. And so it made perfect sense for the district court to say, I'm going to vary upward from that sentencing range.
Because there were two. Not because he relapsed multiple times.
I think both. I don't think those are mutually exclusive at all, Your Honor. I think that
4 minutes remaining. 4 minutes.
Thank you. I think the fact that there were multiple conditions violated, and that one of them was violated numerous times by Mr. Serrano abusing cocaine, which was the same drug that he was abusing at the time of the underlying violent carjacking offense, I think that more than amply justifies the sentence that was imposed here. And if there are no further questions about that.
Did the district court make note of the fact that the drug was the same as the drug involved in the carjacking offense?
The district court did not take that expressly into account, Your Honor, but this court, in reviewing the sentence for substantive reasonableness, is not limited to the factors that the district court expressly took into account. This court can affirm a sentence on any ground apparent on the record. And I think that's a very salient fact. It's a good example of a factor that this court could take into account in affirming the sentence, even if the district court...
I'm going to take you off, though, because I know you want to get to another issue, but this is an issue that recurs in our court a fair amount, and I'm curious your view of it. With respect to a variance, an upward variance, we have case law that says that the explanation's got to be better if the magnitude is larger. In the government's view, is that a procedural point or a substantive point?
I think that that is probably a procedural point, because whenever you're...
So then, if it is a procedural point, we can't very well make up reasons for the district court to explain its variance. We're sort of stuck with what it says, aren't we?
Well, Your Honor, there are two sort of related and parallel arguments. One is the challenge to the substantive reasonableness of the sentence. And on that kind of argument, I do believe that this court can look beyond the factors that the district court explicitly takes into account.
But you just said it's procedural.
Well, there is a procedural version of the argument, which is that the district court violated its duty under Section 3553C to provide an explanation for the sentence.
Yeah.
And for that, I think the court is constrained if the explanation was simply non-existent.
So what do we do about that here?
Well, here, just as a threshold matter, we're on plain error review because Mr. Serrano did not preserve a challenge to the procedural adequacy of the sentence. And that's something that our brief gets into. And here, I think that the district court's explanation, even setting aside this other fact about the nexus between the underlying offense and the supervised release violation, is set aside because the district court didn't take that into account. Even if you set that aside, there is no error here at all, let alone clear error in the adequacy of the district court's explanation, because the district court satisfied its mandate under this court's precedence to identify the main factors that drove the sentence, which, as I was saying before, were the seriousness of the violations, the numerosity of the violations, and the fact that Mr. Serrano was benefiting from treatment as all this was going on. So the district court discharged its responsibility to explain the sentence, even if it could have also cited other facts like the one I just identified that it didn't discuss in its colloquy.
Mr. Barber, what are we to make of the sentence when the sentencing court said the probation officer has extinguished a release source, including outpatient and inpatient treatment? What was it? Was the judge saying that probation had foreclosed any further treatment?
Your Honor, I don't think that that statement is best read that way. It is an odd locution, as I said in my brief. I think if you look to the arguments that the government was making to the district court, which this court has held can illuminate a kind of strange phrasing like that in a sentencing colloquy, the government was arguing that the defendant's treatment hadn't worked and wasn't working. And so I think that's the best reading of that phrase, extinguished a release source. And as Chief Judge Barron and Judge Thompson were discussing earlier, there's ample basis in the record to support that finding, namely the fact that Mr. Serrano was repeatedly relapsing. If I could just finish my sentence. Mr. Serrano was repeatedly relapsing and using drugs while he was in treatment. So it was more than a reasonable inference for the district court to make that the treatment wasn't working.
I mean, now, it does seem different if the judge says treatment's not working and they're still willing to provide treatment, but I'm not going to give them a chance. That's one thing. It's another thing to say treatment's no longer available. It's been extinguished. And it sounds like he said the latter. And as I understand it, the latter is not supported by the record.
I think the latter was supported by the record. I think what extinguished release source means here is that when Mr. Serrano was originally sentenced for the carjacking, he was given a term of supervised release on the back end, despite the fact that drugs were involved and he was a drug addict before he went to prison, on the assumption that he would undergo treatment during that supervised release term, and that is what would enable him to serve that part of his sentence outside of prison. And so what extinguished release source means is that option of having him out of prison, serving part of his sentence out of prison, but in treatment, had been extinguished because it had been shown not to work. And critically here, as the court was touching on with my friend on the other side, Mr. Serrano gave the court no reason to believe that there were other kinds of treatment that were in play here, much less that those other kinds of treatment would work where the treatment that he had received failed. In fact, in his sentencing memorandum, he simply promised that he would return with new devotion to the treatment that he was already receiving. And so I think the district court was well within its rights and its discretion not to take Mr. Serrano at his word for that and to impose the sentence he imposed here. And I also think it's very notable that the district court chose not to impose a further term of supervised release to follow the sentence that Mr. Serrano is currently serving. And that, again, reflects the district court's lack of confidence that further treatment was not going to be able to keep Mr. Serrano out of prison.
Anything further? Thank you.
At this time, Attorney Suero, if you could reintroduce yourself on the record to begin your rebuttal.
Good afternoon. Hector Suero Alvarez again on behalf of Appellant Felix Serrano. I first want to address the last discussion about the issue about treatment history and whether Mr. Serrano was participating and benefiting, and the trouble with interpreting the record and the government's argument that the treatment had failed and Mr. Serrano had failed to proffer an alternative shows that the core issue in this appeal is a procedural error, where there was simply no evidence and it wasn't before the court how Mr. Serrano's treatment had gone forward, whether there were any options left, and any speculation about that treatment history and the possibility that there were no treatment options left is simply improper. So that's a procedural error that forecloses, and it's procedural reversible error.
Did you specifically object to that below?
Yes, we did. We objected, I believe, on page 150 after the court announced its sentence. We made two objections, first to the court considering the dismissed state court complaint, and second to the court considering Mr. Serrano's treatment history. And then the court in response simply listed probation's allegations about the dates that Mr. Serrano had attended treatment or not attended treatment according to the allegations in probation. And I think furthermore, the government requested that the court sentence Mr. Serrano based on his treatment history. Those two things clearly show that was part of the court's decision.
But didn't the defendant concede those factual assertions of either non-attendance or relapse?
Mr. Serrano conceded the positive drug test, the relapse, but we made no admissions about the treatment history. And if the court wanted to go into the treatment history, it would have been on the government, not on Mr. Serrano, to present that evidence and submit testimony, probably in the form of probation, testifying about what treatment he had received, what was the result of that treatment, and what were the possible treatment options that were or were not available. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I rest here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes argument for today. This session of the Honorable United States Court of Appeals is now recessed until the next session of the court. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Counsel, you may disconnect from the hearing.